Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Mark, how's it going today?
Doing well. I'm keeping busy, but I'm doing really well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, you and I were just talking about how busy we are. We're definitely in growth mode.
Oh, and my goodness, yeah.
It's amazing. It's exhausting, but it's amazing for sure. Just serving so many clients, and you know, we're one of the fastest online marriage resources, and that's just awesome. But as we're growing, we're experiencing some growing pains, just like any area of life. When you're growing, there's a little bit of hurt to it, but it's all good.
Oh, Heather, I remember the other day you just shared with me like a goal that you had set. It was just what, like a year and a half ago, maybe a little bit more than that. And we just kind of laughed at the numbers that you had set out compared to where we were at right now, simply because we've grown so much faster than we could have imagined here. And
absolutely. So yeah, it's very, we're very grateful and very honored, and we appreciate all of those that are reaching out for help, because we know that this is such a needed thing in the world, and we just love being able to share this podcast with you and sharing these great messages with you. So it's amazing, and it's only going to continue as we continue to make a bigger and bigger wave in the world and bring more and more people into this movement. So, all right, well, today we're going to be talking about pardon the normal interruption for this special announcement, the normal broadcast for this special announcement, I should say. We're going to interrupt our normal schedule, and we're going to be talking about how to end an affair. And the reason why we chose to kind of pause our normal sequence that we talked about last week was because so many people have been coming to us wanting help with an affair. We've helped so many clients that were dealing with infidelity or even just worrying about their spouse maybe not being honest with them. And so we felt like this was really a timely and important needed message. And not only that, but we're also releasing our first end affair workshop. So the timing is just perfect and it's too good. So today we're going to be talking about three communication practices to open up communication when your spouse is having an affair, how to set healthy boundaries so that you can heal, help your spouse be 100% honest, and bottom of the line is have an even better marriage even after an affair. Before we get to that though, we're going to share two client wins of the week. The first one we'll say comes from Christy. She says, I would be in a lot darker place if I had not gotten this program. And it has been a lifeline. I'm so thankful for you guys. And I just always appreciate hearing, you know, the contrast that this is helping make in people's lives. And then the next one comes from Jonathan, with permission. And I know Jonathan's still in the fight. He's still working on things. And there's definitely ups and downs. But this is one of those definite ups that we want to celebrate and recognize and honor. He says, I want to share a win with everyone. This is a testament to the God I trust and this program. My wife started with, I'm completely done with him. Months later, I just want to be friends. And then nearly 3 weeks later, he says, I shared with my wife a video from High Thrive. She fell asleep next to me near the end of it. Did you catch that? My wife, whom I don't even live with, laid down next to me at my request. My intention was to show her something. I put a blanket on her and laid back down beside her. This was the day before Thanksgiving in Canada. The next evening before I left, she expressed, and I quote, I had a good time. He says, if you haven't, join and stick to the program. Pray and act as if, pray and act as you have received them through thanking God for answered prayer. These people know what they're doing. And so this is a huge win for Jonathan. And I know you're continuing to work on your relationship and want to celebrate that.
Like these people, you know, especially, I'm trying to remember the name that we, Christy, I think we said, you know, Heather, we have a huge emphasis on working on yourself and making sure that you're in a healthy place. And I know a lot of our clients get a lot of benefit just from that. helping them to make some sense out of everything that's going on. But even beyond that, you know, people like Jonathan who are really sticking to the program and being very patient and working through it. You know, I can't tell you that just how many people are, you know, if nothing else, they're getting so far with just opening up communication. But I mean, Jonathan, of course, is getting even further than that. But just about everyone, I can't think of too many people where it hasn't really worked out that we've worked with personally that they can't at least open up communication, get some dialogue going, actually sit down and talk to each other, even though previously they've been at each other's throats. And I think that's really a huge thing that our program is able to do for a lot of these people.
I agree, and I hear the same thing. And if you're in that state right now where you're like, I just want to be able to talk with my husband or my wife, I want them to stop stonewalling me, I just want to open up that communication, these are powerful skills that we aren't taught normally. And it's always what Mark and I start with, because it's almost always like the biggest roadblock, right? You can't get anywhere if you don't have communication. And so that's always what we want to help open up first. So Mark, let's talk about these three powerful communication practices that can help to lead to the end of an affair, help to open up that communication so we can even have conversations that might be really difficult and be able to get that dialogue going with our spouse.
Yeah, absolutely. These things here, this isn't a comprehensive list or anything. These are just, you know, a bit of a sampling of some of the things that need to happen. You know, I like to put that disclaimer out there because sometimes we get people in here saying, well, I tried some of your suggestions and it just didn't work. And they're taking just a small piece of the puzzle and trying to say, okay, well, where's the rest of my puzzle now? And wondering why it's not coming out and looking like the picture on the box when that one piece.
That's a good analogy. That's so true. We really give like the high level overview because we try to make it as general and helpful to as many people as possible. But that's why we always recommend getting specific help for your marriage so that you know exactly how to apply the steps and which ones relate to you the most, which ones are going to be the ones that are help you solve problems in the right order. We see a lot of people trying to solve problems out of order. And so sometimes when you hear advice like this, or you hear these different things, you think, oh, I'm going to go apply this right now. And the bottom line is, Mark and I, we don't know if that's exactly what it's going to be for your marriage. And so it's really important that A, you listen to your intuition, and B, you get guidance from someone who knows exactly what you need. So with that being said, let's talk about first, before we go into what the practices are, some of the common, I guess, thought processes that we see. And we had reached out to our audience because we kept hearing about struggling with affairs, struggling with infidelity, struggling with dishonesty. And there was a couple of things that stood out to me as we did a poll in our Thriving Marriage Facebook group, as well as asked people to fill out a survey. The number one answer was that I don't know what to do, and maybe there's nothing I can do, or I need a miracle to save this. And so let's address that right there, Mark. Where do you think that this comes from? The idea that there's nothing I can do, or I need a miracle, I need an act of God, or simply I have no idea what to do, right?
I think a lot of this is coming from a place thinking that, okay, I'm already overwhelmed. There's already a lot on my plate. And now we throw this huge crisis into the mix. And so how can I possibly do anything more? It becomes much easier than to say, okay, well, I need some sort of Hail Mary, or I need some sort of outside intervention. I need some sort of miracle in order for something to happen here. Or I need for my partner to actually make these huge changes because I simply can't do any of it myself. And it's an unfortunate thing, but I see this in many other circumstances. I see it with, you know, close personal friends who are struggling with big problems in their life where they say, how could I possibly do anything more? You're coming, you know, maybe they're coming. I do have, you know, people in my life who come to me asking for some help. But when I start saying, okay, well, maybe this, this, and this, they say, well, I can't do those things because there's just nothing more I can give. And this is the sentiment that really fuels a lot of this hopelessness here. How I'm seeing this though is, you know, it's not as though to fix problems you necessarily need to work harder or put in more hours. I certainly think maybe there does need to be a little bit of that, you know, in order to gain the skills that you need. But really, I don't think a lot of this takes a whole lot more time than most people have in a day, even if your schedule is fairly packed. But you know, and this right here, what you're bringing up, is a huge piece of why couples have a struggle with getting over affairs. Is, you know, is a bit of this hopelessness. Many, you know, I can't tell you how many times clients have come to me talking about having their partner having an affair, them initially reacting with a lot of anger, and their partner wanting to fix things, and then their partner giving up because, and then pulling away themselves because this hopelessness hit them. So, I mean, I think this gets us into some of the practices that you were mentioning earlier, Heather, which are, you know, some things to keep in mind as you are trying to make sure that you are coming from a very healthy place. You know, these being how you communicate with yourself, or the kind of messages that you're telling yourself, you know, and taking the time to really identify what's really going on in the marriage rather than sticking on that surface level where there's a lot of blame, there's a lot of criticism, there's a lot of hurt being just tossed everywhere. And, you know, even they're just having an understanding of how to handle those really tricky conversations. It's really just a set of very simple tools to pull away a lot from this unhealthy mindset of hopelessness. So let's go into this just for a bit. We can go through each of these. You know, I'm looking at our all the topics that we're supposed to talk about here today, Heather. I'm going to be honest, I don't know if we're going to get through all of them. We might need to split this up into another podcast, but let's at least get through as many as we can. We'll start with the first one. Now, communicating with yourself. Now, Heather, you focus a lot on, you know, developing a personal mindset. You've helped us create a fair amount of the material that we have within the programs on developing mindset. I want to get your thoughts here. How do you really need to communicate with yourself? What kind of messages do you need to send to yourself if you're going to approach this in a healthy manner?
So this really comes down to the heart of why we created this, at least why I was driven to do this, was I recognized that in myself, the stories and the thoughts and the beliefs that I had developed over a lifetime were the very things that were blocking me subconsciously from having the marriage that I wanted. And I want to give some grace here because I'm not saying it's all your fault, obviously, right? Having, you know, your partner betraying your trust is absolutely 100% on them. That's something that we don't excuse and anything like that. So I want to be really careful as I'm sharing this, but I want to make sure that we take control of what we can take control of, because we cannot control the other person, right? We saw a lot of comments about, what do you think you need to solve this problem? Would be that, well, my spouse needs to change. They need to leave the affair. They need to come back to me, or they need to hit rock bottom, or something needs to happen to the affair partner. I even heard things like, they need to die. They need to go to a different country. They need to disappear. And when I see that kind of thought process, I always want to be very cautious and help bring some awareness to that. Because if you're thinking that the answer is somewhere outside of yourself, and if you're thinking it's something that your spouse or their affair partner or whatever it may be about the situation needs to change, then that is a guaranteed recipe for unhappiness. It's a guaranteed recipe for hopelessness, because you've taken the entire solution and you placed it outside of yourself. Now, there are things that we cannot control, right? And there's things that we can influence, and then there's things that we can control. And so we always want to start with ourselves and what we can control, because that's where our power is. And when we find our power, we're going to find more hope to fix the solution. And we're going to find that we do have an influence over the situation. Okay. So what it really comes down to is ask yourself, am I thinking any of these kind of thoughts? Am I thinking, man, people always hurt me. This always happens to me. Bad stuff always happens to me. If someone breaks my trust, I can never forgive them. They will always hurt me again and again and again. Or even those more self-reflective thoughts like, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not capable. I'm not intelligent. I'm not attractive. I'm not good at relationships. Any of those kind of thoughts that you're feeling, the reality is that they're not truth. It's a story that we've been telling ourselves. And we always, here at High Thrive Coaching, want to make sure we solve the deeper root issues. And for me, what I've seen in the bottom of every major challenge and crisis in a relationship really comes down to that we have these limiting beliefs and these stories that keep us stuck in pain, and they keep us repeating the same cycle again and again and again and again until we learn how to change them. Now, our partner has their own set of stories, and that's why we go into our PATH method, which is to try to help them change their story about themselves and the relationship. But right now, we're focusing on us. So if we're seeing that that's where we're at, and that if I truly believe that I'm not good enough and people are always going to leave me, then it's going to cause me to put up walls against my husband, which I did for years. That was my story. And I believed that eventually he would cheat on me, he would have an affair, he would leave me, because I was so afraid of that. That's where I fixated on. So for me, it's really important that we pay attention to how we're talking about ourselves and how we're viewing the situation as well, and clear and remove those limiting beliefs, those limiting stories, so that we can find new empowering beliefs that's what we really want, which would be like, I am worthy of love, right? Mark, I am good enough. I can forgive, I can trust, and I can find peace and healing even in this moment. When people make that kind of shift, Mark, just what kind of results have we seen when people make that kind of internal shift?
Well, yeah, that sort of shift is huge, and it's very applicable to many different problems. You know, if you are speaking about yourself very poorly, if you have a lot of hopelessness, if you are very critical of yourself, it's going to have an effect. Now, concerning the situation with the affair itself, one of the problems I see is, you know, the kind of thought process that happens with this. I mean, here is a devastating moment within a relationship. It really takes away a lot of that security and certainty within a marriage. It's, you know, if you've been building up this marriage for 10, 20, sometimes, you know, I've talked with people who've been doing, you know, been married for 30 years, and suddenly all that is taken away, people are going to react very poorly. And they're going to look for some explanation about why this happened. And these sort of messages, these explanations to yourself, it's really important to be aware of the kind of things that you're saying to yourself. With the affair, I think it's very important that, at least to start off, that you have a lot of acceptance, making sure that you have a lot of acceptance for yourself and for your partner. And I say both of these things because I usually see it going one of two ways. They say, if I had only been better, if I had only not been so angry, if I hadn't been so controlling, if I had only paid attention to my spouse a little bit more, then my husband or my wife wouldn't have cheated on me. And this is very toxic thought. These are very toxic thoughts. It's going to take you into a very bad direction where you feel like you are responsible for this, all this devastation. It's not helpful for you. It's really not helpful for your partner either. It's not healthy for the relationship, simply because, okay, if you're taking on that blame, you're in an unhealthy place, and it's giving an excuse for your partner to continue. Two, the acceptance for your partner is also just, if you're saying to yourself instead, this is all their fault, they've hurt me, and, you know, how could they? They betrayed they're a terrible person. All these things, how could they throw away 15 years of marriage, or however long you've been married? And you start painting this other person as a villain. Well, what happens is that scenario I was describing earlier, where you might have a remorseful spouse, but you end up pushing them away with all the anger and judgment and blame. Now, I get it. Your partner, if they've cheated, absolutely did something wrong, and you might say, okay, maybe they deserve some of this judgment. But if you are feeling a lot of that displeasure, that hatred, that anger towards your partner, I'll just write out and tell you it's doing you a disservice for actually repairing the relationship. We do need to address your feelings. Don't get me wrong. We're not just going to dismiss those, but we can't address your feelings if you're coming at it from a very angry point. Not healthy.
Right. And that's why one of the things that we do with our affair cure method is that we work with you, because those feelings are very natural, they're very normal, and I think that they come to service for a reason. And if we didn't feel angry or upset or bitter or even some hatred about that, or even some self-blame, if you're on that end of the spectrum, then it would mean we didn't care about the relationship at all. So we're not, blaming you or condoning you for feeling those things, because they're natural human emotions. And Mark and I, we felt them too, even on some level, right? I think every relationship has felt some level of betrayal or rejection. And so that's a normal human reaction. But the problem is when people stay stuck there. And what we teach you to do is we teach you how to process through those emotions, how to give yourself that acceptance, give your partner some more acceptance, some understanding, and allow the emotions to teach you something and move forward from them. But way too often, we see marriages completely end because people don't know how to process through their emotions. They stay stuck in the pain. They stay stuck in the fear. They stay stuck in the self-blame. And that's where they stay stuck. And sometimes it happens even beyond the divorce. And sometimes in a person's entire lifetime. The bottom line is it doesn't have to be that way. And you have the opportunity in every single challenging situation, in every heartbreak, in every heightened emotional situation where you want to react, that you have the opportunity to learn, to grow, and to be better. And so that's what the affair cure really helps you to do.
So
So, yeah.
the second piece here, why we actually brought this up first is because if you are not coming at it from a healthy place, all the other steps aren't really going to work all out that well. We talked about like the second practice of really taking time to listen to your partner, helping them open up. This is going to do both you and your partner some good, but if you're coming at it with a lot of blame or judgment, even if they, quote unquote, they deserve that blame or judgment, all that's going to do is that's going to shut them down. They're going to get defensive. They won't open up. And you absolutely want them to open up. This is just coming from a very, very basic level sort of psychology thing. If you want to be able to recover from such a devastating situation like an affair, you need to have some. You yourself, you need to have some understanding about what happened. It gives you a sense of control. It gives you a sense of security, saying, this is what happened. This is something that I can take care of. You won't get that information. You won't get that assurance if you are angry and blaming and judgmental. Conversely, your partner needs to feel heard too, because very likely on some level they themselves are saying, well, this is what happened in the marriage. I wasn't feeling heard. I was feeling rejected. No one was listening to me. And they themselves, if they don't have some of those feelings addressed, the likelihood that they are going to have confidence in the relationship, or the likelihood that you're going to maintain a healthy relationship in the long run, are very slim. There are certainly seeds. These bad seeds that really take place, they start to take root in your relationship. And if they aren't pulled up by the roots here, if something's not done about them, it will pop up later on. And you need to figure this out. Why is your partner feeling, upset to such a degree that they would consider leaving the security of a long-standing relationship to meet some needs? So, yeah, it sounds like you have a comment.
I was going to add to that. That was so very well put, so articulate. I love it. But this is where like 95% of people really fail and why 95% of people don't save their marriage is because they don't understand the underlying reasons of why their spouse did what they did. What happens is we get into a cycle of like react, 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 react. It's like a ping pong match, right? I get angry at you, so I'm going to do this. And then you're going to withdraw and do this. And then you're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to take the kids. And that makes you more angry. And then eventually we're just divorced and we don't know why. We don't really know why. We're focusing on the symptoms of why. The symptoms being the affair, I'm taking the kids, anger, not understanding. And we never really got to those root issues. Like Mark said, when you uncover what the root issues are, that's what gives you a sense of a peace about it and allows you to heal, because you can say, okay, this is what actually happened. And you can only do that by understanding your partner. You can only understand your partner when you get them to open up. So it's all kind of, it's this process, right? It's this journey. So, okay. So Mark, we talked about how we need to help them to open up. We need to kind of remove some of the blaming, mm-hmm. some of the judgment, some of the anger. If that's what we need to kind of remove from the situation, what do we need to bring in to be able to really get conversations opening up between our spouse?
That's a good question. You know, this reminds me of some stuff that I was listening to, and I can't even remember. This is going to sound terrible because I'm not going to be able to give credit where credit is due, but someone was talking about affairs in terms of, you know, three steps, like it was atone, attune, attach, like as in, okay, we need to fix problems, much like we were talking about here. We need to kind of tune in and meet needs, and we need to attach. What you're saying here, Heather, is it's not just about eliminating problems and identifying problems, getting rid of problems. We actually need to add in some things here. And, you know, in the case of just simply, you know, some tools or some communication practices to really add into the marriage, I do think there needs to be, you know, I generally have a strong policy of openness, as in make sure that everything is very crystal clear, that you're spelling everything out, that you are discussing your intentions very clearly, that you are stating your goals very clearly, because in these sort of moments, it's easy to say, my husband, my wife is very angry at me for what I did. They must not like me. They're rejecting me. And that's why they're judging me. That's why they're asking these questions. So I think it's very important to say things like, you know what, I really want our relationship to go well. I would like to heal from this. This is why I'm asking these questions. This is why I'm trying to talk with you. This is why I'm trying to approach it in this way. It can be very reassuring, just making everything very, very crystal clear, very straightforward. And it can really be a breath of fresh air for many couples who do not talk about things directly and do not problem solve well. To have everything laid out on the table can be very reassuring in a very chaotic, tricky moment like dealing with an affair.
I'm gonna highlight this comment again. I had it earlier, but we didn't have a chance to get to it. But this is from one of our Facebook members in our Thriving Marriage group. It says, I couldn't even talk with my husband for 5 minutes 6 months ago. Now we talk up to 2 hours almost daily. So there's something there, right? There's something that's going on there. To go from 5 minutes 6 months ago to now being able to talk to almost 2 hours daily is showing that conversation is really opening up. And our goal is to help our spouse and us to feel a level of comfort and safety and approachability about being able to talk about these things and, you know, handle those tricky conversations and get them to open up. So I just want to highlight that this works, right? And to be able to show the results there is awesome.
There's another comment here, like what do you do if you're separating? Heather, you have the controls here. Yeah. this is another important piece, because I know our audience, a lot, we tend to attract people in a little bit more dire circumstances. So I think this is something important to address here. So the statement says, what do I do basically if separated and partner still talking to and seeing another person? Seems like there's no remorse at all. But it's out of spite. I know it's nothing meaningful. Do I keep trying or just let it go? So in this sort of case, what I would what I'm guessing is going on is the other partner is saying, okay, I've experienced all this pain here in the relationship. Here's something positive going on. And I'm guessing here, but I imagine that there has probably been a fair amount of pain or judgment or blame somewhere in the process of discovering the affair. And so here we have a situation where the partner is being accepted by the affair partner and rejected by the spouse. And in a situation where there's already too much blame going around, it just kind of reinforces this idea that maybe I should stick to the affair partner. So, I mean, what do we do with that given these three principles? Now, there's a whole lot to do, a whole lot to do in this circumstance, but let's just apply just a small piece that we were talking about today. You know, if we're talking about communicating to yourself, it's you're going to need to approach it. I can hear in the comment like that there is some amount of blame going around, either whether that's towards yourself or from your partner to you. And make sure that you are really in a solid place, that you are looking at this and having a lot of acceptance for yourself, looking at it and having a lot of acceptance for your partner, even if they are being a bit spiteful or mean, which sounds odd because, you know, our gut reaction is to fight against things like that. But, you know, I like to give the analogy almost of like a schoolyard bully. It would be really easy to say that schoolyard bully is wrong, that they're mean and they're these evil people. But most of the time, those sort of behaviors are coming out because they themselves are in pain. They're a bit desperate to meet certain needs. And just to approach it with a little bit more acceptance and understanding that negative behaviors come out for a reason. And it, in some way, shape, or form, they're trying to help themselves or serve themselves, make themselves feel better. If we can come at it from that, we can at least have a little bit better understanding. So then, two, you know, really opening up the conversation and listening to your partner, helping them to open up. There's a lot of spite there, and it is what this person is saying. You really need to make sure that you can calm that down. You know, I would love to go into lots of detail and steps, you know, without. But without a lot of details, it's difficult here. And we go into this really deeply into our program. But just in general, the more that you can meet a lot of that anger and spite with a lot of acceptance and calm and compassion, and just trying to understand your partner, it can really soften that anger. And then, you know, we didn't really get into this, but we were going to talk about, you know, just really handling some tricky conversations. There's so many little tools that you could use when you are experiencing a lot of blame from your partner, and it's really difficult to understand exactly how to handle that if you are not used to it yourself. This is exactly why we have our programs. This is why, you know, I've created trainings on handling blame. Or, you know, Heather's created things on fostering a positive mindset. You really need to immerse yourself in some of these, you know, help familiarize yourself with some of these tools so that you can, when you're faced with a really difficult situation, you already have a plan of action.
Awesome. All right. Anything else, Mark, before we move on from communication? I do want to touch really briefly on healthy boundaries. We already did an entire podcast on that, so I do want to touch on it briefly. But do you have anything else about communication that you really want to share?
No, I think we are good to move just for time's sake, if nothing else.
Okay. Awesome. But just again, to recap, communication is essential. It has to come down to how you think about yourself, how you think about the situation, how you think about your partner, and opening that understanding up so that you can have the opportunity to move forward and heal. That's the bottom line that we want to get there. All right. Now, like I mentioned before, we did another podcast, an entire one on healthy boundaries. So we're not going to go super deep into this because if you haven't heard that one, go back and listen to it. And if you've already heard it, you probably should revisit it again because healthy boundaries are essential when dealing with infidelity, dishonesty, and an affair. So make sure that you really have a solid understanding of what we're talking about. First of all, Mark, what kind of the mistake most people think when they hear about boundaries?
A lot of people think that boundaries are about telling people how it is, or telling them what to do, or putting really hard stops in situations. And like saying, you will not do this to me. You are not allowed to do that. We sometimes think about boundaries even with, you know, we almost use the same model we might use with kids, with our spouse, where we might, you know, if our kid is disobeying or crossing boundaries, we put in punishments and we limit freedoms and things like that, which, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the best approach with kids, but it is some, you know, an approach that many people use, and to a certain degree it's effective. With our spouse, it's a different game. And if you try to limit freedoms or put in punishments, even if, you know, your intention is right, you're going to come across as controlling and not understanding. It's doesn't work with equal partners, which is what the marriage should be. Even if your partner has made mistakes, such as having an affair, if you are coming in this and telling them what they can or cannot do, it creates problems. And I much more like to approach boundaries in terms of what you are going to do and what how you are going to take the situation to a healthier place, rather than trying to enforce your will over someone else. Doesn't mean that you have to let them do whatever, you have to accept them doing whatever they want. You know, there's always a response in what you are going to do and how you're going to take it to a healthier place. But I guess that should really, you know, just briefly, it's a good segue into our actual anatomy of some boundaries. Because this, I think, really is helpful in explaining, you know, what's going wrong, you know, when people are making the mistakes. If you haven't listened to our podcast on boundaries, or if you haven't worked with us and really walked through these steps, just very briefly, I like four pieces for boundaries. The first piece being very clear expectations and very, you know, being very open about how you are feeling with things. In an affair, I think it is absolutely appropriate for you to be expressing your own hurt and to be expressing, you know, where you would like things to go, some expectations that you have. So it's perfectly appropriate. If you say, I just can't handle it if you speak with this other woman again, you know, that's perfectly acceptable for you to be laying out things that you are willing to deal with or not. The second, so this is, you know, where a lot of people are fine. They do this thing, they lay out the lines, but I think what I'd add into there is explaining why, how this is affecting you. And if you speak from those feelings a bit better, it's less likely to turn into an argument, more to turn into a discussion. The second piece, you need to actually have some time to understand, why is it so difficult for my partner to meet these expectations, to not cross over the line? And is there anything that is needed, any concessions, any actions that are needed to help your partner get what they're looking for as well? The third piece here is that, where I like to focus a lot of the attention, is on healthy alternatives. So, for instance, in an affair, if they're looking for some connection and you're not willing for them to go talk with the other partner again, you say, hey, look, here are some good alternatives. I would love to sit down on a nightly basis and discuss your day. I would love to do this, and I would love to talk about all the things that you are very much willing to do for them and with them. This emphasis on cooperation is really important. Now, obviously, you all are here because you're struggling with this. So there are times when they will not take those healthy alternatives, and so you do need to have consequences. And I say as consequences because it's not punishments, it's consequences. It's what you are going to do yourself to take yourself to a healthier place. So if you are saying, if you keep talking to the other woman, then you're not going to be allowed to go out with your buddies next weekend, well, you are being controlling. And this is a restricting freedoms. It's a consequence that you have no control over, ultimately.
If you're trying to control, that means you really have no control at all.
Yes, that's very, very true. So those are the four pieces to a healthy boundary. Consistency is also a big piece. Yeah, if you keep waffling and going back on some of your boundaries, it's going to be worthless. So there's all sorts of intricacies and different things that we could talk about with boundaries. So, but that's the we probably took a 60-second overview of them.
Yeah, I thought this was a really good comment, and I think there's probably others that are wondering the same thing, or if this hasn't happened to them, they're fearing that it will. Okay, so this person, this Facebook person said, when I set healthy boundaries, husband lost it. He wants to have his cake and eat it too. Now that I'm not baking cake, he's moving forward with the other woman and treats me like I am the one that cheated and filed for divorce.
And this is why it's really important, as you are setting boundaries, to express how this is impacting you. This is another going back to that clear communication. It's very, very easy to misinterpret motivations, misinterpret actions when the emotions are running so high. And in this case, I'm not going to say that this person has done something wrong. I want to point out that in general, I would expect a really strong reaction when you start setting some boundaries. Like, I can't do this anymore with you. It hurts me too much. So I am saying, like, sharing those feelings can avoid a little bit of this, but I would still expect some reaction because it's a natural response. This is why you haven't put any, there hasn't been any fixes in place beforehand, is because your relationship has developed kind of a natural ebb and flow here. It's created some natural boundaries such that, maybe your partner is used to getting it their way, and if they are not getting it their way, it's hard for them. And so they react when you try to make things a little bit healthier for you. No one really likes extra boundaries. There are certainly ways to handle those reactions better, if you're prepared, which is something that we want to go over here in the workshop.
That is right. And just as a final summary, I guess, of healthy boundaries, what Mark and I have found is that when healthy boundaries are set in the right way, you feel greater respect for yourself, you are protecting yourself, and it actually draws your spouse to you and can allow the relationship to heal. Whereas if you just keep things the way that they are, you're going to continue to experience the same negative results. And in fact, things generally tend to become a lot more difficult. So we definitely want to learn how to implement boundaries in the right way, which is, again, exactly what we teach you how to do with our Affair Cure method, because it's tricky. And I understand. You're like, I don't know exactly what's the right boundary here. Should I let him sleep with her and me at the same time? I mean, most people would say, why not? But we do get that question, right? And there's just so many other things, like, where is the line? How do I protect myself? And then how do I have that conversation with my spouse? How do I do it in the right way so that I actually pull them closer to me instead of pushing them further away? And that's exactly what we teach our clients to do. And we've seen awesome results with that. So if you're saying, like, I just don't know what to do, healthy boundaries sounds great. I would like to be able to feel more respect and protection, and I'd like to be able to draw my spouse to me, but I don't know how to do that. Or if you're thinking, like we heard a lot of people say, I just feel like I need to be the better option than the other person to get my spouse back. You know, if you're thinking anything like that, or if you're thinking, like, I need a miracle, I need an act of God to save this marriage. But above all, if you're thinking, like, I love my spouse, this is really painful, and I want to be able to know that I can trust my spouse, I want my spouse to be honest with me, I want to have a good relationship and be a good example to our children, then I encourage you to go to highthrivecoaching.com/apply and book a call with us, because we can teach you this process and walk you through it step by step, and guide you through all of the different obstacles and challenges. And again, processing through that fear, processing through that hurt, that pain, because healing is possible. It is possible. And we can help you get there. So That being said, if you're in our Thriving Marriage group right now, you also know that we're opening up our workshop for our end of fair here. And so you had the opportunity to join that. But if you're listening to the podcast later, it's only a one-time thing. So I'm sorry, we may not be doing it at that time. However, we always help our clients with this exact situation in our coaching programs. All right, let's go to our marriage myth buster. I like this one. And all right, let's move on. So the marriage myth buster today is once a cheater, always a cheater. Now, if you've heard that, maybe you're wondering if it's true. And I was wondering that too. So I did what anyone would do and I went to Google. So straight out of Google. Now, I found this article in Psychology Today, and there was an extensive study done on affairs. The researchers found that those who were faithful in one relationship, who were unfaithful, so those who had cheated in a relationship, had 3 times the odds of being unfaithful in the next when compared to those who had not been unfaithful in the first relationship. So I'm sure you're saying, Heather, that's not a myth buster. There's evidence. Like, this sounds like
a myth, right?
Right? But I want you to pay attention because there's a really interesting twist to this, okay? The association went both ways, meaning that not only were the cheaters more likely to be cheaters again, but those who were cheated on were more likely to be cheated on again. Twice as likely, in fact, than those who hadn't been cheated on. So this is an interesting thing. Why is this and what can we do to prevent it? Because if it's kind of more of a fact rather than a myth that we're gonna bust, then let's figure out why this is really happening. Why is the association going both ways? Mark, what are your initial thoughts?
I want to point out here, whereas the likelihood does increase, there is still a large portion of people who cheat and then do not go on to cheat again. So there's something happens there, and that's exactly what we're trying to bring up here. The difference between those who go on to be unfaithful again or those who actually end up getting cheated on again and those who do not is that the people who are able to overcome this problem have actually learned some problem resolution skills. There are so many people that we work with where they come and say, okay, there's been an affair. There's also an affair some time ago. And I'll ask, and almost in every single one of those cases where there has been a repeated affair, I'll ask, okay, what did you actually do to resolve this affair? And they basically say, well, they said that they stopped and we moved on. So what this tells me is that those people where the affair stopped and they moved on, they didn't actually take the time to process the situation like they should have. It's because, and this is just about any couple who's really struggling with big problems in their marriage and where the marriage is about to blow up, is there is a lack of problem resolution skills that are plaguing the relationship. I take a look at these situations and, you know, I'm very much used to, if there's a problem in my marriage, I'm going to go talk to my wife. We're going to resolve it. And this is what we do on a regular basis. And so sometimes I have to remember that that's not the case for all couples. And there are many of you out there where you just keep sweeping things under the rug continually, and you keep sweeping it under the rug until the rug is just, it doesn't even resemble a rug anymore. It's this small hill you have to climb up. So if you do not actually end the affair correctly, you know, as a team, if you do not actually fix the problems, if you don't start coming together to meet each other's needs, and you don't actually start working on attaching to each other and recommitting to the relationship and actually working on feeling great around each other, I can almost guarantee you that there will be another affair. You do not have affairs and relationships where everyone's feeling very satisfied, very well connected, very attached to their partner, very committed. That it doesn't happen. And so you're missing some of those steps in the repair of the affair if you are seeing repeated offenses.
Perfect. Thank you. Yes. And so basically recognize that these challenges, they come to us so that we can learn, we can grow, we can become better. And instead of letting the same painful stories and experiences repeat themselves, we can learn and change and improve. And it's absolutely possible to heal, to forgive, and to become unified, even as a couple or even with yourself, even if it's after divorce, if it's post-affair, that you can learn from it and you can grow from it. You can improve yourself and you can find that peace and that happiness again. So thank you so much, Mark. Next week, we're going to do part two. I'm going to interrupt this normal broadcast and share with you the secret to making your marriage even better after an affair. If you're shaking your head like, Heather, you sound like a crazy woman, then I promise you this podcast is going to be for you. Because yes, it is possible that your marriage can be even better than it ever was and can become the best marriage possible for you even after an affair.
Thank you. We're not saying go out and have an affair to make your marriage better, but I do think that, you know, big crises like this, if handled well, actually can result in closer relationships.
Yeah. That's it.
There's the potential. Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. Thank you everyone for watching, and we will talk to you again.
See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.